$1 day rent, China Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. Sugar Ray, Panmunjom, John Randall, the King and I, and the Catcher in the Rye, Eisenhower vaccine, England's got a new queen, Marciano, Liberace, Santayana, goodbye.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning, since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire, no, we didn't ignite it, but the tribe will fight it.
Joseph Stalin, Alan Carr, Nasser and Prokofiev, Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Kahn, Juan Perón, Toscanini, Dacron, Dien Bien, Foo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn, got a winning team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Prince's Great, Katy Perry, Trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire, there's always murder since the world concerns. We didn't start the fire, but we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it.
You're scampering to get this agenda rounded up by Monday. I want to again clarify the proposal that was mentioned in the Sentinel about making sure that all all police shootings of any sort, shootings by police officers where a weapon is discharged, will now be administratively reviewed if the City Council accepts your proposal. But will not be investigated by the Citizens Police Review Board in any automatic process, as in fact they never have in the past in terms of the CPRB holding a public hearing or having an independent investigator. Your plan is not to have either of those, but to have simply a review if this passes the City Council. Is that accurate? Or?
Well, no, it's not quite accurate because part of the procedure of reviewing things is that the board can then opt to have a public hearing or request an independent investigation.
But in fact, at this time, and this is, I guess, a question that is a little confusing for me, the board can request an early investigation even before it a complaint goes through the police department, correct?
That's correct. In certain circumstances, they can request an early investigation, so that's different than an independent investigation, even though they're both independent investigations from the police department, if you understand what I'm saying.
What's the difference between the early and the independent investigation? I know that one, the independent investigation requires the city manager to appoint or, you know, to authorize the funding for an appointing an independent investigator. Is that also true with the early investigation?
Yes, that would be the same. The difference is that an early investigation, the board can ask for an early investigation from the city manager if they read a complaint or they feel the issues around a complaint are so important that they believe an independent investigation is, an early independent investigation is necessary. Otherwise, it goes through the review process, police do the investigation, the board gets that investigation, and once they're doing the review, they can then ask for independent investigation at that point. So that's what we're talking about as far as the review of all police-involved shootings now.
The only difference is that you wouldn't need a complaint at all, that it would be an automatic process whereby there would be a review.
Yes.
But in fact, at any time, now any member of the board can her, himself, or file a complaint, or get a friend to file a complaint, and that could be the basis for an early investigation claim, if they wanted, without any going through this rigmarole.
That's true.
Okay. Finally, claims and the delay of complaints once they hit the police department has been a matter of concern to some of us purists who like to follow this process, as meaningless as it seems to be in terms of complaints ever reaching any substantive conclusions. Still, the question is, if a complaint, let's say the Button Street shooting complaint, goes into the police department, do they have the authority, independent of the city council, to hold off on any kind of a determination of that complaint, hold it from your board, in other words, reviewing it, until, let's say, all court proceedings, criminal proceedings are finished?
Well, I'm not sure what their procedure is if there's a criminal proceeding going on. What I've been told is that until in a circumstance like this where there's a shooting and the district attorney does an investigation into the shooting itself, and then subsequently there's a criminal investigation because the person is being charged with crimes, what I've been told by the IA investigator is that until the case goes to court and the district attorney's investigation becomes part of that court public record, that the police department cannot release those records to the board for review.
So what this means, if I understand correctly, Gary, is that in any serious case of police misconduct, if the police in turn charge an individual and the district attorney chooses to follow that charge, any complaint against those police officers can be stalled for the months and months required for the case to go through the court. Is that accurate?
That's what I hear is the case, and it seems to be the case, yeah.
And indeed, this is wholly independent of the way that the city can stall a complaint by, once a claim against the city is filed, let's say, for some kind of damages, the city has the power to stall a complaint as well in a separate kind of process, right?
Right, but the ordinance also says that if there's a separate criminal investigation going on, the city council can tell the board to stop its review of a complaint until that investigation is done.
So aside from the whole process of the board's never choosing to use its investigative powers or its public hearing powers, the board can be stopped from reviewing a complaint that comes out of the police department by the city council if any criminal process is in motion. And indeed, if any criminal process is in motion, the police department can refuse to even release the reports. At least that's their understanding, correct?
Right.
Well, what do you anticipate are the most important issues coming up on the Monday board meeting, if any, for the public might be interested in?
Well, the board is looking at another recommendation on another ordinance amendment And this has to do with their hearing procedures. They want to have the option of being able to hire a hearing officer to run the hearings should they feel that's necessary. So the ordinance right now does not contain any language regarding the board hiring and using a hearing officer. So they will be considering that recommendation on Monday.
Has your office contacted any other police review boards in any other cities that actually have held public hearings to get a sense of how they do it and how it goes?
I had done that research about a year ago.
What did you contact?
It was varied. Well, actually, I don't think I personally did. I think Donna did it. And I think we talked to Oakland, Berkeley, and Richmond.
Mm-hmm. So the process happened a year ago. Why weren't hearing processes put in place at that time? After all, the board's been in existence or operating since 1995, right?
Well, we have hearing procedures.
So now they want a hearing officer as well.
Right.
Is that because, what's your take on why they feel that this is necessary? Are they just sort of timid about pursuing it themselves for lack of experience?
I think that's part of it. And I think the other part of it is they feel that it's almost like a quasi-legal proceeding, and nobody feels qualified to run that. So.
Mm-hmm. How many complaints have been filed this year, Jerry, so far? What's the grand?
We're up to 19 now.
And is that, I mean, might there be more hiding in the police department that you don't know about, that the police chief has deep-sixed, or?
Not that I know of.
And what about inquiries? There was that whole controversy about the chief deciding what's an inquiry and what's a complaint. Do you have a record of the inquiries coming through, or?
I believe that's going to be coming out in their annual report.
When does that annual report usually come out?
I think soon. I mean, I'm trying to work on mine, but I happen to be talking to you right now.
I do appreciate that. I mean, I think it's important the public know what's going on, and I know that.
Yeah, I understand. I think we sat down and compared statistics about a week ago. I sat down with Lee Sepulveda, the FBI investigator, and so I know they're close to having theirs done, and as far as when they present it to the council, I don't know when that will be.
Now, if you make requests to know how many inquiries have come through the police department at any particular time, are they prone to tell you, or they say call back in a year when the report comes out?
Basically, the city council took the inquiry issue out of our jurisdiction about a year ago.
What about the police department itself? Have you ever inquired as to the number of inquiries since that time to give the board an idea of just what it's missing? Inquiries, for those who don't know, are lesser complaints that the police department feels are too minor to send to the CPRB. In other words, have you actually asked them at any point what their totals have been, or has any board member expressed any interest in this?
No. Okay. On both questions.
No to both questions. Okay, so I guess the board will be meeting on Monday, June 8th at 5:30 at 809 Center Street, and for anybody who wants to come, it is now the rule that you will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak before the board's oral communications period. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
And that is you're accepting this as a limitation based simply upon the board chair's direction, Lisa Rhodes.
Yeah, because if you're asking if there's been a board vote on this, there has not been.
Right. This is a unilateral change, essentially by Fiat. She's decided to cut everybody back to 3 minutes.
By who?
Fiat. That's both the name of a car and also means like a decree.
Ah. Well, if you say so.
Oh, I don't say so. I just read the agenda seems to say so. That's what I noticed. Anyway, so I appreciate your being so forthcoming on this stuff, Gary. I guess folks can reach you by phone if they have complaints to file at 429-3262, and you will get back to them in the event that they catch your message line.
Yes, I try to call everybody back.
And that's a 24-hour line for anyone who's interested. So if you have a problem with a Santa Cruz police officer, one of those folks in blue, you can give a call to Gary Yamane at 429-3262, and he will advise you as to how to proceed. You can get forms at various places in the city. He can tell you how to do that. And the offices, they talk about office hours and so forth. Gary, thank you very much for taking the time. Anything you want to add?
Nope, I got to go.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
And that was Gary Yamane of the Citizens Police Review Board talking to me earlier this week about a meeting which I didn't attend. So I advise you, the next CPRB meeting is a week, I should say a month from about a month from now on the 13th of July. However, you can go into their offices at 915 Cedar Street or call them at 429-3262. I'm going to be gone for about 10 days, as I've said before. But the next couple of shows are going to be covered by Skidmark Bob Duran with some help from some other loyal activists here. Here's a couple of poems for those of you who get to hear this whole tape. I suspect that most of you won't be hearing this tape because the tape is a bit long, and unless Uncle Dennis is late, he's the man who follows up my show, I'm afraid I will be talking to myself. But it's got a couple of great poems by Julia Vinograd that I think I read about a year ago, but they deserve to be reread, from her book Dead People Laughing. Julia Vinograd is a Berkeley street poet who's been writing this kind of stuff for 30 years or more. Here's a poem called Flea Market Musician. A tall, skinny black guy with a scraggly beard rowing his guitar like a boat. Gone fishing, a note tacked to the top of the sky, by God. Gone fishing, back soon. I stop to listen, caught in a cheerful net that makes my mind quit wriggling. All the scheduled sadness and nagging treadmills have to wait while he sings, shifting from one foot to another, like children waiting for the bathroom. He writes his own songs. I got the flea market blues, he splashes. And the next song is, I hate work, repeated with flourishes and cresting dolphins. So while I listen, I can't hate anything. He's oceans old and grins like a boy with a frog in his pocket. I'd like to bottle his songs and pour them foaming all over the weary disasters in the morning paper, or pick up a big pink polished conch shell and hear him singing about when Freddy Krueger met O.J. in the alley. I don't know his name, and he's not always out there, but he helps. And that is Julia Vinograd, Flea Market Musician. And then we have another song, I should say another poem, for San Francisco. Blind men tap their white canes up her black stockings. Bullfighters wave her red satin skirts for their red capes. The city doesn't mind, but she also doesn't help when they get trampled. Spare changers circle her like pigeons waiting for quarters to pour from her eyes. Nightclubs play ghostly cement mixers, music for grinding bones to powder. Sometimes the city dances, gets drunk, and brings a cold well home between her sheets. It seems like a good idea at the time. The city has closets of lingerie, all white, woven from blasted Hiroshima shadows, a scream clinging to her skin. Money is her morning crossword puzzle, bent over coffee, and instantly forgotten. She cleans the stock market from under her mirror-bright fingernails. Sometimes the city wears rags and searches through dumpsters and dead ends for something she can't remember, stealing a crust of stained glass bread from a church window at the Last Supper, or prying spent bullets out of graffitied walls and popping them like pills. Crazies nod to her, but they don't help. And she doesn't find, and she can't sleep. The next day, big orange vested men bulldoze a boutique, mangling blank-faced mannequins like rape victims. The city's high heels go through their plastic palms like crucifixion nails. She can't remember. In winter, she blows her nose in lottery tickets and wears elbow-length gloves of crushed tinfoil, the kind for wrapping leftovers. Donut holes from a 24-hour donut shop so the city's favorite earrings. Whispering, glittering, drug-exhausted secrets into her fizzing hair. She doesn't exactly listen. She's been known to move things around, parking meters on top of the fog, or runway signs turning with the tide, nudged by seal-damp noses. And when the city forgets a lever, he melts into a plastic pail of terrible lush roses that old women sell in BART stations and burrito dives, where refried beans smell of chlorine and Elvis. Long-stemmed red roses nobody wants. That's again Julia Vinograd from her book. It was her latest book, as far as I know, Dead People Laughing. You can buy it for $5 up in Berkeley. Drunken Mouth Harp. When he was drunk enough, his mouth harp blue tattoos on soft skin. Harsh graffiti on bathroom walls, the dark sides of warehouses. When he was drunk as a mud puddle sloping the moon, his mouth harp jazzed up instruction booklets. What they built afterwards wailed, wept, and wouldn't let go. and his big hands melted into his mouth, all clogged with spit and wine. He shook them out, and dozens of hands littered the ground around him, twitching, clenching, and yanking blindly at his shoelaces. When he was drunk enough, he pissed against the wall and put out all the stars. He didn't care. Always more stars in his mouth harp. Blood-stained battle flags from clashing armies went after his notes like children catching buzzing fireflies in summer handkerchiefs. But his hands kept slipping away, slipping away. The flags fell aside, limp as used condoms. The war in his mouth harp was nobody else's business. Besides, he'd just won. A ticker tape parade blew out of his mouth harp, with wildly cheering crowds throwing flowers at his shivering jacket. He wipes his mouth harp on a sleeve and stuffs it in his torn jacket pocket. Street incident. Three large cops make one of the street people pour out the full bottle of red wine he just got. But instead of spilling it into the gutter, he goes to the corner tree and pours it carefully around the roots so that all sides of the tree have an equal chance to breathe in the delicate bouquet. It's a kind of communion from red blood to green. Take this and drink. The tree will get drunk for him. The wind will blow the branches the way he'd wave his arms. The tree will stand tall and take on all comers the way the cops are worried he would. Even his hangover will hang with the ripening fruit. The cops can't arrest the tree. It's bigger than they are. It's over 21, and it wouldn't fit in their paddy wagon. So the cops go away. He leans against the initial scarred trunk, and the leaves, now lightly veined with liquor, whisper marvelous drunken tales in his ear. They pause occasionally as the wind pauses in case they get offense. It's the wine talking, the leaves apologize. And finally, he smiles. So that's about it for the extended version of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on June 11th. Join me again on June 14th, or I should say join Skidmark Bob and his friends and whoever else may show up on the air at that time at 11 o'clock, actually, in the morning, for a sort of substitute version of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides as Bob takes it where he wants. And I'll be back from San Diego, Santa Monica, and Point South probably by the 21st and give you an update from what's going on down there. Thanks for being with me. And any comments, give me a call, 423-HUFF.
Another hour. I hate poetry the way a married couple who don't believe in divorce hate each other. I hate poetry the way Alcoholics Anonymous hates the liquor and has meetings about it. I hate poetry the way an atheist hates God and shakes his fist at the empty hole in the sky. And the more poetry I hear, the more I hate it, and the more I write it. Here I am. For the Berkeley Inn where I lived for 15 years being torn down. The wrecking ball swinging against the bricks as big as Crazy George's shaved head when she took a heavy stick on full moon nights, banged on all the doors, and bellowed for quiet like a charging refrigerator. The cops always came when George had a quiet attack. Heavy shoulders, muscled neck. It took three of them to haul her off, and she was back the next morning. As the bricks tumbled, she roars from the ruins, "Quiet! I said quiet, you assholes!" It's going down. The watching crowd gasps with each blow. It can't be fixed anymore. Not even Charlie can fix it. Charlie, the desk clerk mechanic whose wife ran off with a cop so he became a Stalinist. And the landlady fired him each time he got drunk, but she always hired him back because the elevator was in love with him and wouldn't work for anyone else. He had a dozen TV sets in his room that he took happily apart and put reluctantly back together. And he was kind to me. I look at the plaster dust. There should be records of that kindness set in plaster like fossil leaves. But it's all gone now. And Florence, the first landlady, skinny, tough, always furious. We said she'd run a whorehouse in Texas, which is the highest compliment tenants can give a landlady. She told me if I went out into some riot, she wasn't letting me back in. So, I stalked out nobly, collapsed from the tear gas, and Florence ran after me and dragged me back, more or less by my ear. I once saw her threaten to call the cops on a cop. As long as these walls stood, they knew her name, but one wall is down and the second is going. Now I have to write her name, and she never did think much of poetry. And Guy, one of the oldest desk clerks, much too deaf to work, but he wouldn't believe it. Someone would come and ask for a room, and Guy would turn purple and yell, "You can't call me that!" and reach for a nightstick under the desk, and whoever was backing him would take it gently away. Were we all crazy? Mainly we were friends, and with friends it's not a pertinent question. And there was the building itself. There'd been a banquet room once, closed before I moved in. There was a TV room where we all came and tried to spot ourselves on the news. There were five floors of hot plates, pot plants, parties, people overnight, and never enough toilet paper. There were cockroaches, of course, but very clean cockroaches. I had a room with five walls and a view of the hills. I thought I would live there forever, and I thought I would live forever. A pile of rubble with pigeons circling. But when I close my eyes, I still see that rug in the lobby, red, maroon, blue-looped, swirling. Everyone swore it was the first rug on acid. And I see the switchboard behind the desk, a tangle of beeping lines as the desk clerk snaps, "Hold on a sec. Just hold on." And I'm holding. But it's hard. For the young men who died of AIDS, the dead lovers are almost as beautiful as razor-edged spaces in the air where they used to walk. Do you remember his hand lazily playing with the rim of a glass, making the ghost of a bell sound for his own ghost? And the talk didn't even pause. That glass is whole. Break it. Break it now. Break everything. How can people go on buying toothpaste and planning their summer vacations? Vegetables would care more. The potato has a thousand eyes all morning for the lovers who lived in their deaths like a country foreign to everywhere for a long time before dying. A long time watching people look away. The potato only met them under the earth after their deaths, and still it wept. And we do not. The ghost bell makes barely a sound forever. The dead lovers are still in love, but no one else is. He took his hand with him. A grave is as good as a briefcase to keep the essentials in. A smile, bones, a way of biting at his lip just before looking into your eyes. Shoulder blades cutting into summer like butter. All the commuters in a rush hour traffic jam are cursing because the lovers are dying faster than their cars. The child sent to bed without dinner cries for the lovers, also sent to bed early and without. Unfair. Throw the dishes against the wall. Break them. The dead lovers are almost as beautiful as when they were alive. You can hear the rim of a glass tolling for the ghosts to come home. Break the glass. Break the ghosts. Pull down the sky. Break everything. Dance on the fragments. Scream their names. Get splinters of ghosts under your skin. Torn and bleeding because it hurts. Because it hurts so bad. Just out of jail. Write about me. He stops me on the street. Bright-colored Guatemalan shirt, luxurious cigarette, husky voice insistent. Tell him I just got out. I was 3 years in jail. He takes a deep breath, hesitates. This is important. Tell him I hated being locked up. He bursts out indignantly and then shakes his head because the words don't say it. He looks at me doubtfully. It's spring. Some angry sparrows fight over pizza crumbs. There's a cardboard box full of free puppies with their eyes still filmy. A pretty girl talks to her friends and doesn't notice her strawberry yogurt's dripping to the sidewalk, then she does and squeals. How could I possibly understand? 3 years. Try anyway, he says. You've got to tell them. You've just got to. Personal poem. People want me to write personal poetry about who I am. Well, who are you? Do you wash your underwear? Do you sign petitions? Do you litter? Do you love? What are your hands for? Do you feel cheated at unexpected moments as if you were stuck with the wrong life, maybe mine? What does your face look like reading these words, or when you're asleep or dying, or trying to decide what to order in a restaurant? Do you want to be phony when you grow up? Do you cross at the crosswalk? Do you hang on the cross? Do you floss your teeth? Do you love? Do you hate your work? Does your wallpaper sneer at you? Did you lose a blue and white marble with a crack inside when you were 7? I found it by the drain pipe, but I don't have it anymore. What is it you can't make unhappen, hurting inside you like cancer of the memory? What is it you want to keep as shining as it was when you couldn't believe it was happening? If you show me yours, I'll show you mine. How much time do you spend doing compulsive and complicated arithmetic with imaginary money? Are you on good terms with your scar? Do you remember the sound of a floorboard under your bare feet when you weren't supposed to be listening? Are you listening? How do you convince the air to let you through? Do you want to suffer nobly as a bad film and never wait in line? Can you give me a light? I don't want a cigarette, it's just getting dark. I stare out my window and don't see you. You stare out your window and don't see me. We're going to die someday. Who are you? Do you love? A poem is a street hustler. A poem is a street hustler living on its looks, smart enough to play dumb, tough enough to look easy, and not hiding its meanings any more than it has to keep from getting busted for indecent exposure. Despised and irresistible in carefully torn jeans, a poem leans against the doorway, not quite looking at you and saying nothing just yet. Only the tip of its tongue curls as if forgotten in the side of its mouth. It's young. Got a fake ID and it ran away from home and it doesn't care what happens as long as everything does. Culture makes people yawn. Beauty drives them crazy. As long as a poem is beautiful, it doesn't need anything else and knows it. It laughs dismissingly at everything that isn't perfect. It's a little unkind. Culture comes later when the game gets it and it needs a pimp and a publisher and drugs and distribution and reassurance and reviews, and it isn't so young anymore. Then the English teachers get it and it isn't even a poem anymore, just homework and a social disease. A poem is a street hustler leaning against a doorway, not quite looking at you, and you can't look away. The spare changers came from outer space. The spare changers came from outer space, underneath the grime of the no public restrooms. Those weather-worn skins are green. The spare changers sleep in flying saucers at night. The cops have been enforcing force fields to fight the panhandling peril from other planets. The spare changers have unfair superior technology. They just look at you and it's too late. Their eyes are like that. Strange constellations burn where your conscience used to be. Their blood is made of the tears you locked away, but they haven't been locked away yet, and it's certainly a plot. Those shapeless free box raincoats are patched with rain and hide as many extra arms as a tentacled monster, all empty-handed and spoiling the view. Alien, unnatural invaders shambling and shuddering in mud-stained shoes from the bottom of a Martian canal. The space warp shifts behind their faces like a four-dimensional stutter. The spare changers are incomplete Lazaruses with laser gun glares whose galaxy exploded behind them. There's a black hole in their hearts where everything went away. Lost. All lost. The spare changers came from outer space. After all, we'd never let humans live like this. Drumming. You gotta get to the place where you can't stop, where you've always been drumming. Ache and beat and knee clutch and snarl and grin and curse and the sweet sweat rolls down like rain in the desert. You gotta get to the drumming place inside the bones of the drum, inside the cracked marrow of the bones of the drum, inside the cracked marrow of the bones of your hands. It's the same place inside. You gotta get there. Train whistle inside a wine bottle going round. Barefoot dancers carry your luggage. Polished boots stamp your ticket all the way. A brass horn announces the weather you'll be riding through. 98% chance of a heavy blues front with occasional lightning bolts and lovers and partial clearing in time for the end of the world. But all that doesn't matter. All that's just on the way to the drumming place where you can't stop, where you won't come back, where you've been all your life and only sent your ghost out to take care of business. Everyone thought it was you. And you believed them sometime. Not now. You gotta get to the drumming place made of muscle and God and wood. You gotta leave all your memories behind on an answering machine on the moon when you hear the beep, when you hear the beat. You gotta stick the cracked marrow from the bones of the heart you're pounding on inside, inside. Orphan hate. There is more and more orphan hate around. Usually, hatred's almost an identity. We know who we are by who we hate. Politicians, the other football team, the weather, the person standing ahead in line, a tone of voice, a busy phone, cold coffee, the next morning, etc. But sometimes, hate explodes like a violent sneeze in church or the heart puking at nothing. At random. A street crazy twists his face up in corkscrew disgust, spitting out curses and waving disconnected fists at random. And on the highways, people sane enough to buy cars and get driving licenses and follow traffic signs shoot out their windows at random. I hope. They are looking to kill God or the devil or their own true love. Any of the above would do. Because if they are just looking to kill anyone, we are all truly orphans. It's not that I want to turn this lost hatred to love. That's another problem for another poem. But I'd like to pin notes on people the way mothers do on very small children before sending them outside. Hello, my name is Hate, and this is my address. If I'm lost, please take me home to my mother who hates me. Thank you. At least it would be a beginning. In the bookstore. I went down to the bookstore this evening and found myself in the poetry section. But for every thin book of poems, there was a thick biography of the poet and an even thicker book by someone who's supposed to know, explaining what the poet is supposed to have said and why he didn't. So you don't have to waste your time on the best the writer could do, the words he fought the darkness and himself for, the unequal battle with beauty. Instead, you can read comfortably about the worst the writer could do, the mess he made of his life, how he fought with his family, cheated on his lovers, didn't pay his debts, and not only drank too much, but all the stupid things he ever said to the bartender just before getting 86th will be printed for you, and they're just as stupid as the things everyone says just before getting 86th. The books explaining the poet are themselves inexplicable. The students who have to read them cheat. I left the poetry section thinking about burning this bookstore down. Some of a poet's work comes from his life, okay, but most of a poet's work comes in spite of his life, in spite of everything, even in spite of bookstores. So I went to the next section and bought a murder mystery, but I haven't read it yet. I find I don't want to know who done it and why. I want to do it myself. The drunken toilet. Beer muscles flowing through him, he flexes a grin. "Hey, I fix the toilet," he announces like a birthday party. "I fix everything. I'm a socialist humanist, and this country needs more socialist humanist toilets." He takes a gulp of air and licks his lips with relish. "See my hands?" He checks quickly to make sure they haven't spilled off his arms. "These hands fix things. I could fix that coffee machine downstairs so it grows beautiful flowers. I'm going to go all over this country fixing toilets and make everyone feel good." "Like Johnny Appleseed," I suggest, but he's already swaying off in a halo of dancing bathrooms. "Well," one of the coffee house workers tells me, "he stood next to the guy who fixed the toilet anyway." But it doesn't matter. What are facts to a vision? That night a drunken toilet rose like a full moon, and lovers blessed its light and all the troubles it flushed down on them. Nothing is ever fixed. A nice death I didn't die. At age 3, I was very sick. Hospital, shot up with huge needles that hurt every night, crying when I noticed I was awake. Sick. The only nice thing was the lady who came every afternoon to tell me stories and always spoke gently, and always told me another story when I asked, until one day I could taste my food. And it tasted like horrible, soggy hospital food, but I remembered it, and that day, when the nice lady came, she seemed uncomfortable, and told me one short story and started to leave, and when I asked for another story, she turned on me, her voice loaded with righteous indignation, and said, "You don't need another story. You aren't going to die. There are children in this hospital who need me." And she stalked out, slamming the door behind her. And there I was, sentenced to life. I had betrayed her, and I mean to keep it that way as long as I can. Ginsburg. No blame. Anyone who wrote Howl and Kaddish earned the right to make any possible mistake for the rest of his life. I just wish I hadn't made this mistake with him. It was during the Vietnam War, and he was giving a great protest reading in Washington Square Park, and nobody wanted to leave. So Ginsburg got the idea. "I'm going to shout, 'The war is over,' as loud as I can," he said. "And all of you run over the city in different directions yelling, 'The war is over,' shouted in offices, shops, everywhere. And when enough people believe the war is over, why, not even the politicians will be able to keep it going." I thought it was a great idea at the time, a truly poetic idea. So when Ginsburg yelled, I ran down the street and leaned in the doorway of the sort of respectable down-on-its-luck cafeteria where librarians and minor clerks have lunch, and I yelled, "The war is over!" And a little old lady looked up from her cottage cheese and fruit salad. She was so ordinary she would have been invisible except for the terrible light filling her face as she whispered, my son is coming home." I got myself out of there and was sick in some bushes. That was the first time I believed there was a war. Scarecrow. An old scarecrow, black coat torn at the elbows, old black top hat stuck in a field of corn. Not even the crows believed him. They tweaked straw from his neck to line their nests, and the green corn grew and grew. One night in the dark of the moon, that scarecrow, he climbed down, walked to the edge of the field where a limousine waited. A long, black limousine. He got in, spit one straw into black gloves, and said, "Drive." The chauffeur drove, and the green corn grew and grew. They said bullets wouldn't kill him. There were stories of men who emptied machine guns into him, and he just looked bored. Later, what was left of them was thrown to the crow. They said it wasn't safe to look at him too close, 'cause what you see, it don't make sense. They said nothing got to him. No drugs, no women. He wouldn't even bother to get a new coat. Why should he? Everyone knew who he was. And the green corn grew and grew. People died, money changed hands. People killed, money changed hands. They were so used to it, everyone believed him, except the crows who sat on his windowsill, cawing all night, cawing all night. He stayed up all night to listen. One night in the dark of the moon, he got back in his limousine, his long black limousine, and rode to the field of corn, walked to the center and climbed back on his cross. An old scarecrow, black coat torn at the elbows, not even the crows believed him. They pecked out his eyes and the blood flowed down, and the red corn grew and grew. Serial killers. There's a deck of cards of serial killers now. Imagine telling fortunes with them or playing poker. The victims' families are horrified, the radio talk show hosts are horrified. Everyone's fascinated. I wouldn't mind owning a copy myself, though I'd no more dare buy one than I dared check Story of O out of the library when I was 13 and the librarian was the mother-in-law of the Sphinx. I don't think it will stop with cards, either. I expect the whole Garfield and Batman pageant. Coffee cups and calendars and bathroom mats. Imagine getting out of the tub and drying off with a Jack the Ripper towel while standing on Charlie Manson's face. I must confess I like it. Imagine Jeffrey Dahmer magnets for the icebox. I'm only surprised it took this long. Our heroes have failed us. TV...